In 2019 and 2020, St. John's Lutheran Church in Northfield, Minnesota is conducting oral histories of its members. My name is Judy Carlson, and today we'll be interviewing St. John's members Elizabeth and John Beatty, longtime members of the congregation. Welcome, Elizabeth and John. I'm looking forward to hearing your St. John's story. So let's start out today by you're telling me and our other friends who will be listening in eventually about how you ended up at St. John's, when you joined, what attracted to you the church, and maybe even some history of churches in your past, where you grew up, were you Lutherans, were you not, etc. So let's hear a little bit about your beginnings here.
Well, the way we ended up here, Paul and Maribeth Beck, who are also members of St. John's, Paul and I taught together in Wells, Minnesota, and Paul and Maribeth moved to Northfield a year ahead of us, so they moved here in 1989, and when they did some church searching, so they went around to the various Lutheran churches, checked them out, and they settled on St. John's, I think primarily because of the quality of music was their primary connection initially. And so when we moved here, being they were such dear friends, it made no sense to even do any church selection. And so that's what prompted us to be here. And then Steve and Jane Amundsen also were members here at the time. And Elizabeth's brother, you can probably explain that better. Our sister-in-law actually had a connection with Steve. Right.
Steve Amundsen's first job was in Tacoma, Washington, and he went to the church that my sister-in-law's dad was the pastor at, and her mother was the organist, and so Steve also worked with Mary Helen Thompson, and so we are kind of shirt-tail relations through my sister-in-law. Oh. It's a small world in the Lutheran community.
Yes.
It's a lot of connections.
So Paul and Mary Beth did the research for you.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So, and it's, yeah, like I said, it just didn't make sense for us to go anyplace else because the church has always been where we have formed our core relationships with the people that we spend time with. So, and that's where we, well, in part, that's where we met Mary Beth and Paul too. We went to Good Shepherd Lutheran in Wells together and sang in choir together, all four of us. And So
you came in about 1990?
We came in 90, yes.
To St. John's?
Yes.
Yeah. And how about your own backgrounds in church? Were you Lutherans?
We both grew up in Brainerd, Minnesota, and John went to the Swedish Lutheran Church, and I went to the Norwegian Lutheran Church.
We were LCA, and they were ALC. Elizabeth's father was a Lutheran minister.
So I'm one of the zillions of PKs in this congregation.
Yeah, and then my parents were as good as ministers. I mean, they were the first ones there. They unlocked the church, and we lived at the church as a family. Uh-huh. So, yeah.
So when you speak of your core as the church with Mary Beth and Paul, it really goes back to history, your own histories.
Correct.
With the church. And what have you enjoyed about St. John's over the years?
The music, yeah. We so appreciate Nathan. Nathan has been such a wonderful...
What a gift to...
Yeah, what a gift. Well, and it started with Carolyn Jennings, and that probably goes to one of the other questions I know that you're going to get to is influential people, but...
How have you both been involved in music?
We joined choir right away because Paul and Mary Beth were both in it, and we have been in choirs before, and that's our major interests. Well, we just like to sing. And
you both are in the choir?
Correct.
Yes.
Still.
Yeah.
We've been all 30 years.
Yeah.
We've been
30 years in the choir.
Yes.
Wow.
Of course, we're only 31, so.
Yes, right. Just because the choir
and every church we've been in ever since we started, we're married,
we've sung
in the choir. And I did not grow up in a musical family. My dad, I would say, was probably tone deaf, and my mother liked to sing, but So it wasn't until Elizabeth's family is very musical, and Elizabeth is very musical, has a gorgeous voice. And upon her encouragement, when we were lived out in Montana, we were in this tiny little Lutheran church, and it was a tiny little choir. So fortunately, I sat next to Larry Torsky, who was an incredible bass, and learned a lot from singing, and our choir director was incredible. So that got me hooked.
And in Montana, it's been part of your history.
Hardin, Montana, yeah. The Crow Indian Reservation. So my first teaching position was out on the Crow Reservation, yeah.
And you're an art teacher?
Yeah, taught visual arts, yeah. So I taught first through sixth grade art out there, yeah.
Out west.
Yeah, not the pretty part of the West.
But it was a very good experience.
Yeah,
and then was Wells next after that?
Yeah, then we got back to Minnesota, and we went to Wells, and we were there for 3 years, and there I taught K-12 art, and then Elizabeth was in clinic nursing primarily, and then we moved here.
In 1990. So choir has been a major part of your life.
Yeah. And Carolyn Jennings was the director when we first moved here.
That. Yes.
And she was wonderful because we had children shortly after we moved here, and Paul and Mary Beth had David, who was two when they moved here, and she had childcare in the nursery for our children, and that was marvelous.
Which allowed us to be in choir.
And they were so tolerant of having our children up in the choir loft with us. David Beck even got his finger stuck. There was a little hole.
There's a little ring pull for one of the doors in the floor.
On the floor. And he got his fingers stuck in there. And everyone was so wonderful that they all pitched together to get his finger out, go and get soap. And he stayed quiet the whole time, so I don't think anyone down below knew he was fighting
this was
with
on
us.
A Sunday morning.
It was Sunday morning during the service.
Oh.
But that was very affirming of Carolyn to provide childcare and be so incredibly accepting of little ones upstairs.
She knew that in order to have you there, that was part of her job, is to help you be there and help you be successful.
And very welcoming and affirming.
Yeah. And after Carolyn, who was your director?
Ron Rodman for quite a few years.
Oh, okay.
And then
Dan Finn.
Oh, that's right.
And then
John Ferguson filled in between while they were looking after Dan Finn left.
That's right. Yes.
And then Nathan Proctor.
No, what a gift Nathan is.
You know. Yeah.
What do you enjoy about his being here? What are some of his gifts that he gives to us every week? I have my thoughts, but I would love to hear yours because you know him better when you work with him in the choir.
He is so incredibly positive. Yeah. Always.
So our practice is an hour and a half, but it never feels like an hour and a half. And I've been in choir practices where sometimes just like this, I'm ready to be done because it gets a little bit bit of a drudgery, I guess. But with Nathan, it never is. Never. He's so affirming and he just keeps things moving along, and we sing in such a variety of music, and he challenges us with the music that he selects. And not always easy, but we end up doing it. You know?
And I usually attend the second service, so I don't often hear the choir, but when I do, I'm so impressed. It's just wonderful volume and precise. I can understand the words and
good. We work on that a lot, so that's wonderful to know.
I bet you do.
But he does it in such a way that it's not a criticism when he wants you to pronounce the consonants more or a vowel in a certain way. And he's very good at telling you how to make the sound he wants, and that isn't always in the case for
directors.
Sometimes they tell you what they want, but they don't always tell you how to do it.
How to do it.
Mm-hmm. He's been very good at that.
Yeah.
He brings in many of the composers of pieces that we do, and then they tell us the story behind the music and then work with us in their song too, so you have a feeling of what they really want conveyed through the music they have written. And I find that very helpful.
So, for example, they had a piece commissioned by Dan Coleman for the 150th. And Dan Coleman came in and directed and walked us through it and directed it on the Sunday that we performed. And so, and we've had Anton Armstrong come down and do pieces. Bob Schultz.
Sig Johnson came in. Her brother wrote a piece.
Oh.
And she came in and told us where that came from and then directed us. Oh, it was just wonderful. He's not here anymore. Auspice.
Yeah.
Chris. He came. Yeah. He arranged a piece and he came and worked with us. Of course, John Ferguson works with us quite often.
Yeah.
Who else has come?
The younger man.
Maybe
call him Dr. Bob.
Oh, yes.
The new organ.
Yes, Anson Hall.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Is it Jim?
Yeah. Jim Bob? Bob?
So something close to that.
Yes.
Yeah.
He has come and worked with us.
How generous of them.
Yes.
Yeah.
Very, very. And I think that also reflects the relationship Nathan has with all of those people.
Yes.
And that they want to help him and they're willing to say, sure, I'll come. And
he is a product of their teaching and their mentoring.
He has maintained relationships with them.
Yes. Wonderful. Mm-hmm. Well, how nice to hear a little bit of that history of the choir with the visiting conductors and the history involved in it. You're saying that that helps you get really engaged in the music, not only the tunes, but the soul behind it.
You get that variety of styles of directors, and it makes you, I love singing for Anton. You know exactly what he wants, that's no nonsense. I mean, if you sit and chitter chat, he snaps that right down, I'll tell you what. And he does not want to waste time. So, you're a little on edge, with Nathan. It's just like, okay, it's nice to get back to a little calmer, a little more. So, it makes you appreciate what you have.
Anton basically works with students, college students.
Yes.
And so working with adults, he may bring his directing style and his requirements to the adult level. But what a treat.
Yes.
You have experienced amazing musicians through that. How else have you been involved at St. John's?
I have, through the years, we used to have little mini concerts between services. We'd have two or three a year. For a couple years, I was in charge of that. So we'd get pianists do a little mini. I was in a woodwind quintet. We did one. We used to have youth recitals, so we'd get high school students to do one, usually around Mother's Day in the spring. What else? I always bring cakes for funerals.
You do. I know that.
Cakes, bars, cookies, whatever it is.
Yes.
I tell people I can cook and I can clean. Those are my fortes.
Yes.
Being that I've taught middle school and our confirmation program, the progression of that is their ninth grade year for our students is they have this mentor-mentee relationship.
Yes.
And being that I've just had a lot of those kids as eighth grade, I don't know how many mentorships I've done over
many,
the years.
Many.
So
they see you at school and they see you at church.
Well, the relationship's already developed, so you're already a step ahead of a lot of these students. Don't necessarily know other adults unless it's a family friend, and that certainly happens. But a lot of times they, especially students that aren't necessarily as regular in the church.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a known entity, so.
Yeah, it's not too scary.
Yeah, I don't think so.
Not too scary at all.
Yeah, no, so.
Oh, interesting. Didn't know you did that.
Yeah.
And what a great transition, really, for our children to see their teachers in a worship setting.
Yeah.
That's quite impactful. So.
I was on the Faith and Health Board or Committee for 2 terms, so 6 years.
Yeah.
You know, it's mm-hmm. we. And then you do the occasional things, help with yard work or cleaning the church. Mm-hmm. Music has been probably our primary commitment.
The core, but really in depth with. Mm-hmm. And I'm sorry that I missed your solo a few Sundays ago, but I will be watching for your name again. And John, do you do solo work also?
No, one of the first Sundays we were here, we did a duet together.
Oh.
And so, but no, I haven't done anything since then. Uh-huh. Not my comfort zone.
Uh-huh. Well, have you contributed your artistic ability somewhere?
My artistic style is much more whimsical. I was always had wanted to be an animator or cartoonist as a child, and so that's kind of where my bent is, and I do three-dimensional sculptures that are, again, far more whimsical than what would be kind of churchy.
Churchy.
Yeah, I'm sorry. They wouldn't fit here. Uh-huh. Yeah.
He's helped with confirmation with the hands and those.
Oh, yeah.
Sure, so, yes.
Painting.
Yeah, you have many talents to contribute variety of ways and places. Well, tell us about your children and their relationship to St. John's.
We have two boys. Leif is 27 and Bjorn is 23. Both were born while we were in Northfield here.
They are
children of, true children of the congregation, born, baptized here, confirmed here. Another thing I appreciate about this congregation is they were so open to having my dad do the baptisms. It was Les Svensson at the time, and he was just so, absolutely your dad can do the baptisms.
And he should.
And so he was privileged enough to baptize both of our boys here. And they were in they're shyer than probably John and I are, more introverted. So they weren't as involved in extra things. They were in Sunday school, of course, and they participated in confirmation.
Well, for Leif, our oldest, when he went through, there were three boys in confirmation and at his grade level, and the rest were all girls. And it was a huge group of girls, like there were four Marthas and
four Marthas.
Like that. And it was a time where our confirmation program was rigorous. They had tests and they had a study, and although Leif, both boys went to Gustavus, and Leif's first, you know, they have to take a religion course, and Leif came home from that and he said, this is easy, I know all this stuff. Oh. And it's just like, well, it paid off that you studied when you're in confirmation. So I think for Leif that was a struggle to be active beyond mm-hmm. that, just because, you know, he didn't have friends in it, and a number of students, like in Bjorn's class, they left this church and went to like Bethel or someplace else because their friends were there, and then so he ended up in a group that had very few boys as well. By the time they got to confirmation itself, it really whittled down.
They both did go on the National Luther, or the convention, National Youth Convention.
Yes.
They both went on that trip, and they enjoyed it a lot.
And both in New Orleans.
Which prepped them. They both were involved with Habitat for Humanity spring breaks at Gustavus for all the time that they were there. And I think Gustavus was an excellent choice for them and was influenced by the confirmation program, going and having retreats at Gustavus. So they were familiar with that school and the campus before they left high school.
They weren't going to be townies at St. Olaf.
No. They both vocally said that.
They're
not staying in town.
But they continued in their faith worship at the kind of college that welcomes that at Gustavus.
They're both married, and they are on to their own lives. And
you're not grandparents yet?
Not yet.
No.
Not yet. Well, it's a joy. You'll be Be ready. Let's see. What are your hopes and dreams for St. John's in the next 150 years, or even shorter, the next 10 years, 15 years? What would you like to continue? Is there anything?
One of the things I've always been impressed with here, and it doesn't matter, we had a fundraiser, I don't know, was it for the organ, or what was it for, one of the earlier fundraisers, or was it for the St. John's Hall, I think. Anyway, but this church has always set aside, they've tithed whatever fundraising that they do, they tithe and they contribute a certain portion of that to outreach or other, you know, just like with 150th going to the Community Action Center, going to Laura Baker School, etc. And I've just appreciated the fact that we don't just take our gifts and keep them within our own walls, that it goes outside, and you feel like what we do contribute as far as our gifts, and that being monetary gifts, goes beyond our own walls. Mm-hmm. And so you're serving the greater community.
So tithing is an extension of what we normally think, or I normally think, of tithing as my own gifts.
Yeah.
But to have the church represent tithing.
Yeah.
That's a good thing to remind us, and also to have noticed.
Because I don't know if all churches do that. I mean, I don't remember our home church doing that growing up, but, you know, I wasn't probably too concerned about that at the time.
I'm not even aware, or maybe they didn't do it.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. Mm. Speaking of outreach, several people in our conversations here have talked about the growth in outreach in other ways of St. John's over their years being here. That is into the community. Do you have similar thoughts, or any thoughts about your appreciation for that, or has it changed over the years?
I'm impressed that this congregation is always, well, has seemed in the time that we've been here, to be very aware and concerned and willing to have dialogue and discussion about what's going on in our community. What are the needs of the community? How can we, as people of faith, meet those needs? And the Lutheran Church on a whole, that they're willing to talk about some tough, controversial subjects of our time. Gay clergy, for instance. Mm. You know, that's a tough question. And at least they're willing to say, we got to talk about this. Mm-hmm. There may be no right or wrong answer, but let's talk about it and let's come to some consensus and have some sort of a statement about it. And I appreciate that about our synod, our denomination, and our individual congregation. Mm-hmm. Those aren't always easy discussions to have, but most aren't even willing to have the discussion.
Much less to reach out and
say,
"We welcome."
Yeah. Exactly. Sure. And so, of course, there's always the desire to have more diversity in your membership, in the people that come to worship. Minnesota, our diversity in the town of Northfield has some limitations. Mm-hmm. But I think that that's always a goal and a desire and a wish in our world today, is to respect and invite and be open and welcoming to diversity in whatever way that is, whether it's racial, religious,
economic,
gender preference, gender identity, whatever the issues are.
How about pastors over the years? Have you connected with one particularly or the other? And I know you spoke of Les Svensson.
Our first Sunday here, Les saw that we were in the congregation and we were obviously new faces, and he made a beeline for us and made sure that we were welcomed. And I'd say probably for a good half a year, he made sure he made contact connection.
We really connected with Mark Johnson.
Mark Johnson.
Because at confirmation with Leif, they were talking about Christmas traditions. And our Christmas tradition is very Norwegian and somewhat unusual. And Mark Johnson's was the same. And he said, I've never met anyone that does Christmas Eve like my family. And so he spent Christmas Eves with us for all the time he was here, except one.
Oh,
one
goodness.
Christmas Eve, he was invited some for family.
He'd come over, you know, after the, you know, 5 o'clock service.
Oh.
You know, he'd wrap up here. We'd be home getting things because we'd be at the 5 o'clock service, and then we'd prep. And then he would come, and he'd have dinner and dessert with us, and we'd start opening gifts, and then he'd headed back to do the,
oh my goodness,
you know, prep for the, you know, 11 o'clock service.
So we miss him a lot.
Yeah.
He was part of our Christmas tradition for a long time.
Yes. And what is that unusual piece that you share with him?
We have, it's the food. We have a rice porridge. It's not a sweet, like a rice pudding dessert, but it's a rice porridge and spare ribs.
Oh.
And that's it. That's all.
And then you put butter, cinnamon, and sugar on the
rice.
And then we have candles.
I'm not sure his family did that, but that was ours.
A candle tradition, yeah.
You have, what did you say?
We have an individual candle.
Oh, candles.
So, yeah, so you read the Christmas story, and then you light off of the Christ candle your individual candle. And then as you eat dinner, of course, that goes down.
Uh-huh.
And then whose candle goes out first starts the dishes. So
I think, you know, it was to represent that Christ is the light of your life, but my parents, you know, to keep the children at the table somewhat quiet. If your candle goes out, you have to start the dishes.
Yeah.
Oh boy, we wanted that candle to last as long as it.
Oh, how interesting.
And that was actually from my dad's
family.
Yeah,
it was a fun tradition.
Mm-hmm. And had that come from Mark's family also?
No, I don't think they did the candles, but
the
had the rice and ribs.
Yeah.
Rice and ribs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, and I bet he was so grateful to have that connection.
Well, we certainly had a good time.
You
know,
also.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
And we continue to do that. Dan Fenn always would come over, and Nathan comes
and
over.
Nathan comes
and Nathan's
too.
Parents have been coming lately, so he doesn't come for the dinner, but he still comes for dessert.
Oh,
coffee.
For rice and ribs.
Yes. Knowing that, especially single musicians, you know, that's a big day. Christmas Eve is a huge day. And what do you do all by yourself when you're, you know,
you don't
far from
be
home?
By yourself.
So we've always invited. In fact, one of my most embarrassing moments was in this congregation, our first years here, in choir. It was Thanksgiving service, and it was a terrible snowstorm that day. And we had a St. Olaf student interning with Carolyn Jennings, his last name was Schultz, but I didn't realize it was Bob and Cora Schultz's son. So I thought, I don't want it. He's stuck here, you know, in the snowstorm. So I went up to him afterwards. I said, you do have a place to go for Thanksgiving, don't you? You should come to our house if you don't, because I don't want you to be alone. And he gave me this funny look. He said, yeah, I have a place to go. You don't have to worry. Well, then I realized, he's one of the Schultz kids, and he just lives about two blocks away.
And he has a loving home to you.
Yes.
But the fact that you invited him.
And he didn't say anything to me about that. He just said, I do have a place to go.
But
I was nuts.
What a loving gesture.
Yeah, well.
Well, if that's your most embarrassing point, you've had a good life. That's
there you
a good go. Chance. Well, thank you so much for sharing your history. Is there anything else you'd like to add about anything relating to?
Well, you know, I went through cancer in 2000. in 2008, and I was diagnosed in January, and after diagnosis, obviously, people talk, which is fine, and I don't have any problem with that, but Dave Hagen, who is a member of this congregation, had gone through rectal cancer 3 years prior to that, and he called me up and he said, John, he said, this is David Hagen. And I knew him from afar. Sue taught in the school district, and I knew David because he had been diagnosed, and people, you know, we
had
been praying for him, and had his, had both the daughters in school. And so he calls up and he said, John, I'm going to drive you to all your chemo, your radiation and chemo there. Appointments. I said, you don't need to do that. I can drive myself. He said, no, I'm going to do this for you. John Walters had actually done it for Dave. So it's kind of, I think it's kind of like a pay it forward, pay it back, whichever way that goes. Anyway, what a gift. And it was like, I think for both of us, that process of being able to communicate and talk about what it was like to go through that. For him and then for me, and because I think a lot of what he shared, he had never been able to share with anybody else, just because it's, you know, unless you've done cancer treatment, you don't know. And so, and one, you know, we got a few gas cards, and so I was trying to give them to Dave one day, and I said, here, Dave, you know, you're paying for all this gas, and take these. He said, you know what, John, said, this is all being taken care of. Don't you worry a bit. And so it's like, how many people I don't know, you know? It's incredible. It's so, and there's still people, you know, Will Bras, the Mickelsons, Heibergs, these people we didn't know. Came out of the woodwork and were just so incredibly supportive and have continued. I mean, Gordy still asks how I'm doing, and he's made me a couple of
beautiful
wooden pieces to, you know, to keep the faith and to stay positive. And so anyway, that's just, and that's some of those things that just most people don't realize happens within a church congregation. It's something that you just can't appreciate or say thank you enough. And so,
and your way of saying thank you will be to pay it forward someday.
Yeah.
That a blessing will come to someone from you.
Hopefully.
Yes. Oh, yes. Why don't you do that? By welcoming and inviting people to your home. And so that is your nature. And this church, it is those individual things that we rest of us don't know about, don't need to know about, but that you know, and that's come from this core of Christians in this building.
Yeah.
What pleasures.
Yeah.
And how are you doing?
Well, so, yeah, and then on
very
top
good.
Of that, yeah, and then I have a brain tumor that I was diagnosed 3 years later. That's probably the rectal cancer, that's taken care of, but the brain tumor is just kind of an ongoing, just monitoring, and it's something that's not cancerous, but it is malignant in the sense that it can continue to grow, but it hasn't since, 2017 I had. I had oral chemo, which stopped the growth of the tumor. And then in fall of 2016, it started, so it's on my left side, started to appear on the right side. And that was a concern because if it damages the same area in both hemispheres, you can start having personality change. And Elizabeth doesn't want to be married to somebody she didn't. I don't want to change. I like who I am. And so, anyway, my neurologist, he just suggested, he said, you know, this is, you know, we tried chemo again, and he's just not doing it, and he said, so I would highly recommend that you do a radiation chemo combo, and we just really nip this. And and with the technology today, it does very little. They can target the tumor so precisely that it really doesn't do any subsequent damage to the normal healthy brain tissue. So And he assured us that between the two of us, we'll have at least one brain. He doesn't have the best bedside manner. But anyway, so that was in 2017. I went through 28 days of radiation or something like that. I can't remember how many days now. And then chemo through that Thanksgiving. But so since then, I've had...
Status quo
scan. So
praise the Lord.
Every,
that's right.
Every 3 months, MRIs. So,
mm-hmm.
But anyway, so
you have wonderful history at St. John's.
It's been a great place.
You've been gifted, and you have given
without a doubt.
Immensely.
I think we've received far more than
absolutely.
We give. But
well, there's always room for receiving and giving
yes.
as the days go by,
yeah.
isn't there? Good. Anything else that you'd like to add?
No.
We certainly
that covers it.
I think
that covers
so.
It. Okay. Well, thank you, Elizabeth and John, for sharing your story and your family's story as part of the St. John's Lutheran Church Sesquicentennial